Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Break the Cycle with me, your host, Joshua Smith. I hope everyone is having a wonderful Wednesday. It's almost the weekend. You guys are almost there. I promise you, you're going to make it. Stoked to have you guys in the chat tonight, man. Seriously. I know the shows have been few and far between. Like I said, something just keeps coming up. I was supposed to have Heist on the show last week, and he's got some stuff going on, so he's not going to be able to come till next week. And we've had to reschedule James Gentleman three times, and it's just been a problem. But we do have a great show for you guys tonight. I'm very excited about this one. Of course, let's start off with some sponsors. We have TopLobster.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get all kinds of great hand-drawn tees, hats, shirts, backpacks, hoodies, this great Break the Cycle pillow that you can put on your couch to be styling and wiling. And you can get all of that stuff at a 10% discount by using BTC at checkout at TopLobster.com. Good stuff. Definitely check it out. Or you can join the Patreon, subscribe star, or become a member of the YouTube channel under all of my videos by hitting the join link, where you can get into a private Discord server and get up to 30% off of all of his new gear 2 weeks before it goes to the general public. Plus, you'll be helping me travel to state conventions. As you guys know, I'm traveling to state conventions right now on the weekends when I can. And so the more money we raise, the more states we can get to, the better chance we have of becoming the next vice chair of the Libertarian National Committee. Good stuff. So help me out if you can. And of course, executive producers of the show, anthemplanning.com, for all your emergency and crisis planning needs. Check them out today. See what they can do for your business, home, or personal life. They're doing a wonderful job that the government has historically sucked at, much cheaper and much more efficiently. Seriously, when you're done with the show, go check them out if you own a business. I promise you it will be helpful. Guys, we got a great show for you tonight. As I said, if you've been watching, there's been some crazy shit going on with YAL, Young Americans for Liberty. This is an outlet that I've been a fan of, you know, and as somebody who sits on the Libertarian National Committee, I've gotten a lot of shit for supporting YAL and going to YAL conventions and stuff like that because they support Republicans. But they try to support Liberty Republicans and even some Libertarians, if you can believe that. I've seen them actually support some Libertarians. So when I saw this stuff going on, of course, it hit close to home for me because I'm a big fan of YAL. And, you know, Reed Cooley, my guest tonight, he's been, you know, we've been following each other for a while. We've talked, and I saw something going on, and he reached out to me and let me know what was going on. So former vice president of communications over at Young Americans for Liberty and policy fellow at the Independent Institute, Mr. Reed Cooley. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, Joshua. Thanks for having me. I'm good.
Yeah, of course, man. Thanks for coming on. Man, it's been pretty crazy, dude. It's been pretty crazy, I know, and I want to get into it. But before that, when people come on my show, usually we start off talking about your journey to liberty and all that great stuff. I'm sure it had something to do with Ron Paul, as most of our generation did. But why don't you tell us how you came to these ideas of liberty, sir?
Sure. So I began with Young Americans for Liberty. About 2014, 2015, I started getting more involved with my YAL chapter at the Baylor University. Here in Waco, Texas. Sick'em Bears. Started there. I double majored in anthropology and history whenever I was at Baylor, and I actually began my career as an archaeologist. But I did several archaeological projects and decided that the fight for liberty was a lot more important, and that archaeology made a phenomenal hobby, made a really terrible career.
Sure.
So I decided to get out of archaeology as quickly as I could, get into a much more important fight, which I felt was the fight for liberty. Once I sort of jumped ship from a career in archaeology to a career in politics, I got in touch with a couple of people at Young Americans for Liberty. They put me in touch with some campaigns happening within the YAL sphere. I worked on several campaigns before being invited to come work for YAL in a full-time communications capacity there in late 2018. And I'll be sure and save the rest of it for the rest of the show.
Sure, absolutely. And so when we talked prior, I knew that you were like high up in communications for Young Americans for Liberty, because you guys had retweeted me a few times and you had reached out to me, talked to me a little bit about my show and stuff like that, and in other capacities as well. But I had no idea that you basically everything, any kind of communication at Young Americans for Liberty basically came through you, correct?
That's correct. I will say it was a team effort.
Sure.
You know, the entirety of the communications and marketing apparatus that people see at Young Americans for Liberty today, that's to say everything from social media to TV to radio, podcasts, op-eds, press releases, targeted ad campaigns. I was the architect of all of that. I mean, I built all of it. I brought on good people who could help me execute and actually, you know, roll up their sleeves and do the hard work it took to build that with me. But, you know, it was the communications department, which includes the social media presence that I seem to get so many compliments about, even though I'm no longer there. You know, that was something that, that I built over a period of over 3 years. Now, that's not to say that there wasn't communications at Yale before I got there. But whenever it came to a lot of the systems, the protocols, the procedures, the metrics, all of that that were put in place about communications and really building share of voice and brand recognition for Young Americans for Liberty, all of that was my creation. So I had several vendors and three full time staffers that worked for me in different capacities. So, yes, I think it's accurate to say that pretty much everything from social media to earned media did in one fashion or another kind of come through me.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and before we get into this conversation heavy, because we're gonna get into this conversation heavy. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot to go over. When we talked on the phone, you were going and going and going. And I was like, hey, let's just do this on the show. It's gonna be a lot better if you're willing to be public. But Young Americans for Liberty started out as Young Americans for Ron Paul.
Students for Ron Paul. That's right. Correct. Yeah, it was founded in 2008 as a Students for Ron Paul.
So this is an organization that is built to be based. I mean, straight up, it was supposed to be a based liberty outlet that gets people elected. I mean, the Win at the Door campaign was hugely successful. I followed it very closely. You know, I've been friends with a lot of people that have worked with y'all. I won't go into too many names right now because there's some other drama. But why don't you talk to me about what you think y'all is supposed to be before we get into this conversation on your happenings with the new president?
Well, I think that you just said it. Young Americans for Liberty was really established to be the force for libertarianism that America needed all the way back in 2008 as Students for Ron Paul. I can tell you that, you know, probably my favorite piece of libertarian literature happens to be a book called For a New Liberty by Murray Rothbard. I would hope that at least the majority of your audience has read that.
Sitting on my shelf behind me, dude.
Sitting on your shelf behind you. That's what I like to hear.
Always.
Part three of it is what resonates with me the most. Obviously, it's you really get the feeling Rothbard is writing from his soul.
True.
With every single sentence and every single word. This is just pure, unfettered Rothbard that you're getting. But it was part three titled A Strategy for Liberty that really resonated with me most. And, you know, so we're talking about something that, you know, a book that came out 49 years ago, you know, just under, you know, half a century ago, right? And as I'm reading Rothbard's prescriptions, basically his blueprint for how to achieve victory in part three of For a New Liberty, I just felt like I was reading something that I wanted Yale to become, right? So Rothbard, he talks about, you know, the importance of education, but he doesn't leave it at that. He's obviously not a lazy intellectual by any stretch of the imagination. So he defines education as existing in two parts, one part theory, the other part movement, right? He talks about how, you know, within this new libertarianism, as Rothbard describes it, you have to have a deep, profound, rich understanding of the theory, but you also have to have really aggressive movement. And by movement, he means attempts to engage TV, radio, press releases, newspapers. He makes explicit mention of student activism there.
Right.
He says, you know, theory and movement are both vital. If your effort to achieve victory for libertarianism is missing either one of those components, then you really have something that is what he called sterile and futile. So, I mean, I was really wanting something for Young Americans for Liberty to, excuse me.
You got the Rona, buddy? You all right?
Yeah, no. Hopefully not. I've had it one time already. I hope I don't get it again. I've heard you can get it again.
Oh, yeah. I've had maybe it more than just, once.
Maybe it's just Omicron or some other, you know, really harmless variant.
Yeah, Omicron was like, I've had worse head colds than Omicron when I had Omicron. So you'll be all right.
Right. But I was just hoping that Young Americans for Liberty could be the institution that finally acted on this amazing theory, this amazing strategy that Murray Rothbard very brilliantly laid out half a century ago, right? So with a lot of the content that my team and I created together, I think you can sort of see a young, smart, rebellious, and aggressive attempt to market liberty through high-quality, hard-hitting content that is unapologetically libertarian. So, that was just within my capacity as vice president of communications. You know, I wanted I wanted Young Americans for Liberty to sort of house this Ron Paul meme factory, you know, where we could create all these amazing things and really give the Ron Paul revolution the long-term marketing effort that it deserved. That was my dream for Young Americans for Liberty, at least within my capacity. Although I do understand Young Americans for Liberty is a policy org, and we needed to recognize that within our capacity as the communications team, right? But I wanted that to be one of Yale's many weapons in its arsenal in the fight against the state, right? So, that was my vision. I just wanted the sort of, you know, punk rock, rebellious, aggressive attempt to market these ideas that I believe the American people are really craving and that our movement, unfortunately, has never had.
Sure, sure. So y'all was created to be this wonderful, beautiful thing. And I think for a long time it was. I think it was doing a lot of really good stuff. And I think you as well as I could probably pinpoint when these matters started. And it really takes us in. It really sets the stage for Conquest's second rule of politics, right? The any organization not explicitly right wing will eventually become left wing, and you know, as somebody who's in the Libertarian Party that's like trying to push back on that and has been fighting that for 5 years and it's working, you know, the party is definitely becoming more right wing economically and pushing that way for a lot of social issues as well, but let's talk about when did the problem start at Yale? First of all, you've been let go. We'll preface it with correct. That you've been let go. But when did the problem start?
So, in January of 2021, Yale had a change in leadership due to some allegations of misconduct against a now former CEO, right? The organization's treatment of women was brought under serious question. And so a few months later, the board of directors hired a lady named Lauren Doherty to fill the vacant CEO position,
who was the executive director of the Libertarian the Libertarian Party. By the way, in case anyone's wondering, she was like the development director, and then when Wes Benedict, who was the executive director of the party, stepped down, she filled into that role. And then when Joe Bishop Henchman became chair, he ended up letting her go from that position, or she stepped down from that position and left. And then we were all kind of surprised to see her become the president at Young Americans for Liberty, I think, because I had worked with her in the past and going, that's just not an organization for her. But please continue.
Yeah. So to put it bluntly, whenever she came on board, that's whenever the problems began. So I had already been at Young Americans for Liberty for several years, building out, you know, this communications department that had existed since before her, to put it quite honestly. The problems began with her. It seemed almost immediately whenever she came in. I felt like she was a very bad fit for the organization. She did not understand or appreciate, in my opinion, the values of the organization. So in an all-staff meet and greet with Lauren several weeks before she actually took the position of CEO, she one of the staffers asked her opinion on the Federal Reserve. And she admitted in front of everybody that she didn't necessarily believe in ending the Federal Reserve. I believe she said that she hadn't yet done her research on the matter. She was still kind of reading it. So she was trying to plead some sort of Socratic wisdom, a little bit of humility, if you will, on the issue of the Federal Reserve and the fact that she hadn't really done a lot of research into it. But given the fact that she was about to become CEO of the organization that was founded as Students for Ron Paul, that was a red flag to me, and that was a red flag to a lot of other people. It was a red flag that I really kept to myself. I decided to be professional and try to make things work with Lauren anyway, right? That was my goal all along. The entire time that Lauren Doherty and I were both at Young Americans for Liberty was, I was thinking, okay, she doesn't quite understand what makes, you know, the Ron Paul brand different than libertarianism at large. But look, we got to try to work with her anyway. Because, you know, I felt like a few creative differences would not have been a big deal. But as, you know, as I'll elaborate on much later, you know, it wasn't just a few creative differences. It was a deep and just profound
fundamental,
you know, disagreement on even the basics of the Ron Paul brand. So it seemed really clear from the very beginning that Lauren had every intention of taking the brand in a new direction, a direction that I felt was very bad for the organization and very out of touch with the Ron Paul revolution, as did many, many other staffers. These 10 months of conflict between myself as a person trying to defend, you know, the Ron Paul brand against what I felt like was Lauren trying to change it, this culminated in the events of last week. So it was a Monday morning, February the 7th. I got a call from the board of directors. It was a very short Zoom call. And they notified me that that I was being terminated for my, quote, unwillingness to follow Lauren's directives. That was the only justification that I was given throughout that call. Translation, that means my unhappiness with having to abide by directives that contradicted, you know, the values of the organization. But within hours of terminating me, Lauren brought in none other than Dan Crenshaw's former campaign manager, a fellow named Brendan Steinhauser, to y'all's leadership team. Gave him the position of chief strategy officer. Let's reflect on that for just a bit. Dan Crenshaw's campaign manager was not just brought into the organization. This person was put in a high-ranking position from the very beginning. But this person, Mr. Brendan Steinhauser, did not just serve as Dan Crenshaw's campaign manager. In 2018, he wrote a glowing blog praising Dan Crenshaw for things like his courage and his leadership and all these other traits. But in more recent months, Mr. Steinhauser has shown his true colors on social media. And fortunately, this has started to come to light thanks to the actions of other people who are very angry with the situation. So in August 2021, Mr. Steinhauser came out on Twitter numerous times as against the United States withdrawal from Afghanistan in August of 2021, against the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. And starting in December, Mr. Steinhauser came out numerous times in favor of military action against Russia over the continuing Ukraine crisis. I've had some people tell me that, we've all worked for candidates that maybe we don't necessarily agree with anymore, and we all make our way to the Ron Paul revolution through rather imperfect means. But it's different whenever those tendencies are not shed before getting here, and whenever they are put at the highest level of leadership inside of an organization that is supposed to be committed to the Ron Paul revolution. I mean, on what planet is it acceptable for this person? I'll actually quote a tweet that he shared just 4 days ago, so a number of days after actually taking office as Yale's chief strategy officer. It read, "What are the odds that Russia invades Moldova after it takes over Ukraine? There are already Russian troops in Moldova, and it is the poorest nation in Europe. The country is not a part of NATO." So this is content that this person is posting after he's accepted a ranking position at Young Americans for Liberty. And you can go to his Twitter page at B, letter B, Stein, S-T-E-I-N, 80, at B Stein 80, and you can see this content for yourself, right? But, you know, that's what's happened. Look, I won't sugarcoat this, Joshua. The woke war machine has taken over Students for Ron Paul. There is no questioning that at this point. And I am so tremendously sorry to just everybody across the movement that I have to be the one to share that. I mean, just such heartbreaking news as that. I can tell you and people who were on the inside, whenever I was on the inside of Young Americans for Liberty, I fought harder than anyone else in the history of that company, in most cases alone or with very few people by my side, to try and prevent this outcome, this hostile takeover of Young Americans for Liberty. But I still couldn't stop it from happening. There was no institutional recourse for me. I was just one member of the executive team. I was obviously outnumbered. I was having to appeal to a board of directors that I felt like was very unwilling to hear my side of any of these issues whenever I was taking them higher up the chain. But there are people still inside Young Americans for Liberty who truly understand and believe in the Ron Paul revolution, but they're outnumbered just like I was. And it seems that they're still being made to feel like outsiders in their own organization.
Yeah, that sucks, man. There's so many people who have done so much work for Young Americans for Liberty too. I mean, we're talking thousands and thousands of people. It's not just like 25 people. I mean, you have thousands of donors, thousands of people that work at their campus for Young Americans for Liberty, thousands of people that knock doors during the Win at the Door campaign. I mean, it's a big movement. It's not some small thing. And I don't understand how. First of all, Lauren got the position like that. As soon as I heard that she was the new president, it was like, you know, it had me scratching my head. It almost felt like, you know, after this stuff that went down with the allegations prior to this, it almost felt like you had a board of directors that had to make up for it. They're like, well, here's a woman. You know what I mean? And it was like, but this is not the, even if it's a woman, it's not the right woman. You know what I mean? Like you could have put a woman who, you know, held the same values and morals that the organization stands for, in that position, instead of just throwing one up and being like, here you go, there's a woman, you know, we were not great to women. And so here you go. And I never really got into all the allegations. I watched the Y'all 2 stuff come out on Twitter, and you know, I was supportive to some of the people that I knew personally. But at the same time, it was like, I don't know anything about it outside of what I saw on Twitter, right? But it did feel very reactionary, like all of a sudden Lauren is now the president of Y'all. She had just left the Libertarian Party. I mean, she had just walked away from being the executive director, and you know, the staff there were not happy with her as an executive director. Some that I know personally, and then to see them, you know, her go over to Y'all, which is a much bigger organization than the Libertarian Party, truly, than the Libertarian National Committee for sure. Was very hard to digest. But why don't you tell you got a lot more on Lauren and the stuff that she's done since she started there. So why don't you kind of expand on some of that stuff, man?
Yeah, of course. So I think I agree with your observation that this was a dramatic and tragic overcorrection of a problem. But I don't think that it only boils down to the fact that the board of directors was looking to improve optics. In the wake of several allegations against a former leader of a sexual nature, right? I believe that the board of directors also saw in Lauren a sort of ideological direction that they felt like the organization would have to go in order to survive, or maybe they didn't necessarily think that Y'all would have to survive, that Y'all would have to adopt this sort of ideological direction. Yeah, you know, Lauren wants to take things. In order for the org to survive, right? Maybe they simply wanted the org to go in a new direction regardless. But, you know, creative issues popped up really immediately. As soon as Lauren came on board. So I think there was, the first instance, this involved Liz Cheney. So you can go to Tho Bishop's Twitter page and you can see some correspondence posted to this page.
That's the homie Tho Bishop.
The homie Tho Bishop.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's all good, man. So you can go to the homie Tho Bishop's Twitter page and you can see some of the correspondence between myself and Lauren sent to my private cell phone. So it was early May. I want to say it was May the 11th, 2021, to be exact. Y'all posted the first of many tweets attacking Liz Cheney, right? Which is what Young Americans for Liberty needed to be doing.
That's like the moderate position.
Yeah, that's like the moderate position. Like that's a no-brainer to anybody who knows anything about the history and the philosophy and the values of the Ron Paul Revolution, right? I mean, Young Americans for Liberty, or Students for Ron Paul, was founded in opposition to the Bushes and the Cheneys. So
and the McCain's.
My communications team, they crafted a post attacking Liz Cheney. Lauren, however, had some questions about this and pinged me with a series of texts reading, and I'll quote, "My brain isn't at its best this week, but isn't what Liz Cheney is doing right now more aligned with our interests than other times? I don't see how criticizing her right now on her opposition to Trumpism is in your best interest. I frankly commend her for her courage on this one." So that was just otherworldly to me. Like, I felt like I had just slipped into the Twilight Zone. To hear the CEO of Students for Ron Paul questioning my rationale for wanting my team to attack Liz Cheney, a war criminal. It was just absolutely insane. But Unfortunately, that was just the beginning of the problems I had. Like I said, you can see that on the Homie Tho Bishop's Twitter page. It was later that same day, my communications team posted a graphic featuring a silhouette of an AR-15 with the caption, "More guns, less government." Lauren then pinged me individually with the following questions. Food for thought. Are images of militant-looking guns undermining us?
Oh.
Would images of less militant guns be better?
Oh.
I didn't know what to make of that. It was just bizarre. You know, like the AR-15.
She should have been fired on the spot, dude. On the spot.
Yeah, that was. But somehow she gets to keep her job at Young Americans for Liberty, and I don't. Maybe I did slip into the Twilight Zone there. I'm not quite sure, but it was just, you know, like AR-15s and stuff had been in Yale's branding for years prior to that. Like, you know, you saw Yale's, you know, campus activists going onto colleges and holding up flags of, like, you know, with a silhouette of an AR-15 and Young Americans for Liberty, hashtag make Liberty win below it, right? And Ron Paul campaigned with AR-15s in videos that he would put out. So it was just like a less militant gun than the AR, less militant looking gun than the AR-15. Really? It was just insane. But unfortunately, all of this was just the tip of the iceberg.
Long black gun scary, buddy.
Yeah, long black gun scary. Exactly. Fast forward to early June of 2021, my communications team posted a picture of Kamala Harris laughing into a microphone with a caption reading, "Find someone who laughs at your jokes the way Kamala Harris laughs at a question she doesn't know the answer to." This was a pretty harmless piece of content, as far as I could tell. I mean, attacking Kamala Harris, if you want to think about it this way, the second in command for the White House, like, that's for being an idiot, for being a person who just can't answer any question, who freezes in press releases, and with a person with such a brutal hat in the past, in particular on criminal justice reform, right? Lauren got angry, you know, at this post that my communications team had created about Kamala Harris, and sent me a series of text messages ordering me to take the post down. Her justification read as follows. "It looks really bad if we are calling the first non-white and female VP stupid, which is how many people will see this." I fought Lauren on this, but she refused to budge. She made my team take down the post, which, as far as I was concerned, was incredibly on brand. There's no reason why tyrants should be off limits because of their race and their sex, as far as I could tell. Like, you know, convince me if I'm wrong. Like, you know, set me straight if you think that maybe I don't have it quite right there, Joshua. But that was just insane.
This is a funny, joke that should, I mean, definitely on brand for Young Americans for Liberty, really on brand for anybody in this country that's not a Democrat, to be honest with you.
Yeah, well, even most like moderate Democrats, or maybe even, you know, left of center Democrats I know, would still be willing to criticize a candidate, even if they were like a woman of color, right? So like, this really seemed to put Lauren to the left of a lot of Democrats I know who aren't necessarily happy with Kamala Harris and the job that she's doing or not doing as vice president. So that was just insane. And unfortunately, we just kind of slipped further and further down this Dante's Inferno of insanity. The more of these sort of creative conflicts that I had with Lauren throughout the ensuing months. So fast forward to December, or early December, your audience might remember Thomas Massey tweeting out a picture of him and his family with some of these very scary guns, right?
Beautiful
their machine guns.
Beautiful Christmas.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful picture. It was an amazing way, in my opinion, of promoting the Second Amendment, of showing pride in self-defense and gun ownership. The Yale staff really felt the same way. This really seemed to galvanize our staff and our activists. Everybody loved it, but Lauren seemed to find issue with this image. So she sent an all staff email, an email to all the Yale staff, basically condemning, the the image of Congressman Massey and his family posing with their guns, right? She framed it in the form of questions. And you can go to T.J. Roberts, the homie T.J. Roberts, Twitter page, and you guys can see this for yourselves. Lauren's email that she sent out to people. But so she sent out an all staff email condemning Thomas Massey's Christmas card and reminding all the Yale staff that many people find guns very scary.
First of all, I just want to,
yeah.
I want to really, really drive this point home. This is Thomas Massey we're talking about, okay? And this is the president of the Young Americans for Liberty, at which like every conference they've ever had has had Congressman Thomas Massey at. Okay. I mean, he is literally a huge supporter of Young Americans for Liberty. Young Americans for Liberty is a huge supporter of his. He's probably, I mean, he's the only libertarian in Congress, in my opinion. You know what I mean? What the fuck, dude? Like, I don't understand how it cannot compute with me at all that she would say that, like, condemn a picture. It just, I'm lost for words here, man. I mean, this is a northern light for liberty politics in the United States, Thomas Massey. I mean, he is literally almost I could probably count on one hand the amount of votes that I've had a problem with him on. And even those ones, he's explained them to a degree where it's like, well, yeah, that makes sense. You know what I mean? And so it just blows my mind that over a Christmas picture with his family carrying, okay, he was holding an M16. I get it. It's who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand why, of all the things, that was something that she would take issue with. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Unless you were trying to turn this organization in a direction that's completely opposite of what it was intended to be, what it was started to do, what it supports. I mean, that's really what it sounds like to me. Like you're trying to turn this into a leftward direction. I mean, you want to attack guns. You don't want us attacking the Democrats. You don't want us attacking war criminals. And it gets worse, right?
Hi, kids. Do you like violence?
Are you sick to death of pussyfooting around the truth while being constantly fed lies by news and big tech tyrants? If so, then come join me, Dan Smotz, on The System Is Down, where we get weird, have fun, and dig into all the dangerous taboo topics like conspiracies, politics, religion, culture, current events, and everything your family just prays you don't bring up around the Thanksgiving dinner table. And I know that reality is scary to some people, so if you're easily offended, just ignore this and go back to making cat memes or whatever. But if you're ready to change the world for the better, come join me on The System Is Down at tsidpod.com or wherever you get podcasts. That's tsidpod.com, because the system is down and truth is taking over.
Which, what you were telling me on the phone before, I mean, there's even worse things that have happened, correct?
Yeah, just in case your audience thinks it can't get any worse, I'll guarantee you it does. It was a very long 10 months. Being in my position at Young Americans for Liberty, trying to stop this sort of stupidity from completely ruining the organization, right? So it was just a few days after the incident with Thomas Massey, Lauren emailing the staff and condemning Thomas Massey's Christmas card, that Lauren contacted me and made my team take down an image condemning masking children. Okay. So my team put up a graphic, an original graphic that they had created, and the image in the middle was like a stock image of like a bunch of little kids. They looked like they were in preschool with masks on their faces. And the caption that was written above this read, "The desire to mask children is evil." Okay. Lauren contacted me individually. She made me take down that post because, in her opinion, masking children is not evil. She actually contrasted it from the Nazis and said something to the effect of, I don't remember exactly how the text read, but she said the Nazis were evil. Masking kids isn't evil. So I pushed back on her, told her that I felt like that was a really misguided sort of objection on her part. It was off brand, obviously. She refused to budge. She made my team take down that post and repost it with a caption that did not say that masking children is evil.
Imagine contrasting like that, first of all. Okay, listen. AIDS sucks, but cancer doesn't suck. You know what I mean? It's not as bad. So it doesn't suck. Yeah. It's like the Nazis were evil. So, hitting your kid with a baseball bat isn't evil. Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense whatsoever. It's child abuse, first of all. I've only put a mask on my children when it's like absolutely they have to be masked to go somewhere they wanted to go. You know what I mean? And like Disney World. We were in Disney World in October, and anytime we were inside, we all had to wear a mask, or we couldn't have stayed at Disney World. And I wanted to take my kids to Disney World, so we did. You know what I mean? But saying that... has she done other things in support of the COVID regime?
As far as things that Lauren has done in favor of the COVID regime, there are matters I'm not completely kosher. It's good for me to share quite yet here, Joshua. So I'm not sure that I can give all that extensive on an answer. But even if we exclude other things where Lauren has been really horrible on the COVID regime, you know, just for the sake of, you know, me understanding what I can communicate with the public right now and what I probably shouldn't be communicating, at least not quite yet. It gets a lot worse. It gets a lot worse. I guarantee it. So it was around the same time as this whole ordeal. I believe this was around Christmas Eve, this next instance. Lauren ordered my communications team to take down a meme that we had created. It was kind of Christmas themed. And it featured Joe Biden, like on a grill, okay? And it said, liar on a fryer, okay? It was you know, one of my clowns on my comms team. He created this. We all thought it was funny. Lauren contacted me individually and made me take down this meme calling Joe Biden a liar because she didn't think that we needed to be calling politicians liars. Huh. I'm here to say, like, if students for Ron Paul can't call politicians liars, like, what can we do? Like, what any organization, a political organization that can't even call a politician a liar, like, that's how can such an organization make any meaningful impact on the world of politics? Well, I don't think it's possible.
This organization that was started in the name of the man who, during his retirement address, called Congress a bunch of psychopaths on the congressional floor. Hello. I mean, Dr. No was the one man that was willing to go into the into Congress and call everybody liars. He was the one. He was the one that was willing to do it. And you can't call politician liar from the organization that was started in his name? Fuck out of here.
No, we couldn't. You know, so like, I guess liar was just too strong of language in Ms. Daugherty's opinion for Young Americans for Liberty to be using in any sort of external correspondence. So we were just having our hands cuffed, you know, in one way after another, you know, so that, you know, like, I'm glad that we were still able to produce content despite all of this that people seemed to like and resonate with. But I can tell you, it stopped us from achieving a lot of other things along the way. Another instance, this was the day after Christmas, December 26th, 2021. My team posted an old patriotic painting of three revolutionary soldiers marching out into a battlefield against British soldiers, right? Like, one of them was like beating on a snare drum. Another one was playing a flute, and another one was like waving the flag. And this is just an old classic, you know, patriotic painting, right? And the caption above it said, "The way things are looking, we might have to get the band back together." Lauren then contacted me individually and ordered me to take that meme down because she felt like that an image of the American Revolution could be misinterpreted to advocate political violence. I have the receipts on this. So like such a rule meant that the overwhelming majority of imagery from the American Revolution was no longer something that my team could share. What? This was just insane. This was just awful. It really crushed my morale. It crushed my team's morale. It really capped our potential, for what we were able to create, capped our potential on a lot of levels. I mean, when you can't call politicians liars, you can't celebrate the Second Amendment. You got to be careful about how you talk about war. You can't celebrate the American Revolution. You know, what can you do?
Right.
That was just utterly, utterly absurd. There's one more instance that I'll go into, you know, for your audience here. So this was several months ago. My team posted an image condemning a drone strike in 2019 that killed 80 civilians, right? And Lauren, I don't think that she actually made us take down this particular post, but she contacted me individually and said that she had serious problems with the way that we had framed this graphic, with like, you know, the language that we used surrounding it, because it's like, you know, we were condemning the U.S. military, what she felt like was unfairly, and that, and I quote, most of these are usually accidents, meaning drone strikes. Most drone strikes are usually accidents. Most civilian deaths because of drone strikes are usually accidents. Well, no kidding. They're accidents. That's what makes them so awful. So that was just insane. Like, my team had to tiptoe around how we could criticize civilians getting killed by drones, because Lauren Daugherty felt like we might be insensitive towards the military, towards the Pentagon, towards, you know, the war machine, whatever else. So we couldn't approach very many issues in any sort of meaningful way, in any way that aligned with the values of the Ron Paul revolution. So what I've shared so far, all of these instances, this is just a taste of what the communications team at Yale and I had to deal with my last 10 months there. And for all I know, the communications team at Yale is still having to deal with nonsense just like this.
Sure, absolutely. And I'm sure they are, and it's going to continue that way. And the more people they bring on in that vein, the more the whole organization is going to become that way. And we, you know, we saw this with the Cato Rothbard split, right? And the Libertarian Party. You know, the Libertarian Party started out as a, you know, you could say right wing or whatever you want, but they were staunchly libertarian, and they were economically libertarian, and it kind of floated away from that after, you know, especially into 2000, 2004, saw Michael Badnarik as the presidential candidate. And from there it was Bob Barr and then the Gary Johnson runs, and it's kind of going back because of the Mises Caucus to the Rothbard side of things. But, I really look at this like the conquest's second rule of politics, and, you know, and your organization was this beautiful organization that was ready to go and take on the left in America, really, you know, and now it's going to start becoming the left. I mean, what do you think people should do in this instance? What do you think people should do with Young Americans for Liberty at this point?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that, I spent the last 10 months of my time at Yale feeling like I was not fighting tyrants outside of the org. I felt like I had to fight tyrants inside the org every single day. I felt like my impact on the American political landscape had been diminished to relatively nothing because I was having to spend time overcoming just all of these unnecessary obstacles from inside the organization. I'll be very blunt with your audience. I don't believe that Young Americans for Liberty can be saved from its fate. I don't believe that the Ron Paul Revolution died the moment I was terminated. I believe that the Ron Paul Revolution died in that org the moment that Lauren Daugherty was hired as CEO, right? And I don't believe that it breaks my heart to say this because I put years of my life into that company and I had a very, very clear vision for what I was hoping that it could become. I don't believe that there's any reviving the Ron Paul Revolution inside that organization. I believe that what we need to do is we need to understand exactly what went wrong inside of Young Americans for Liberty that caused an organization that was originally founded to be based, as you described it a little while ago, to become this squishy, neoconservative, woke, Nixar work, just bastardization of itself that it is today. We have to understand what went wrong institutionally, internally, and I believe that it's time that we build new institutions, that we build new efforts, we build new organizations if we have to, or that Ron Paul revolution can be kept alive, because any attempt to return to the values of the Ron Paul revolution in Yale's social media content, in its earned media content, I believe will be nothing more than symbolic gestures designed to save face. I do not believe that there is any sort of deep-seated firm conviction among the people running that organization, whether it's the board of directors, including the founder of the company, Mr. Jeff Frazee, or among the remaining members of the executive team in the Ron Paul revolution. I simply don't believe that. As a person who dealt with this every single day, who endured countless sleepless nights over it, month after month after month, I don't believe that our efforts are best spent trying to identify various institutional recourses with which we can correct this situation inside that org. I don't think it's realistic. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that now is the time to diagnose what went wrong with Young Americans for Liberty, and let's carry this Ron Paul revolution elsewhere. I firmly believe that. I gave it my all at Young Americans for Liberty, trying to protect that place from this outcome. It obviously didn't work out the way that I wanted it to. But my advice is, do not become convinced for a single second that what's happened to Young Americans for Liberty constitutes a defeat of liberty. Do not give up. Do not give in. This country, this world, it needs liberty more than it has in generations. And we cannot let that movement die because one organization got taken over by the most worthless and the weakest branch of this movement. We cannot allow this to mean the end of liberty in this country as we know it. This fight has to continue. The fight for liberty is an eternal fight, and it is on us to figure out exactly how that carries on.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there are some other good places for people to land as well. And you know, I don't know. Obviously, I'm a member of the Mises Caucus and the Libertarian Party. I've been a supporter of the Mises Caucus since 2017. It's become this great big organization with thousands of people around the country that's doing great things. But there is a Mises Caucus for the Republican Party now as well. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Pretty cool stuff, man, to see, you know, that the Mises Caucus thing is catching on. And, you know, if you don't support the Libertarian Party, if you're a libertarian or a liberty-based person who's involved in politics, and you absolutely 100% cannot support the Libertarian Party, I get it, man. You know what I mean? Like, I totally understand that it's just something that you know, some people just can't do it. They can't. And maybe 5-10 years down the road, when the caucus has completely taken over the party and made it this wonderful outlet for liberty, and we start getting politicians that are ready to run for these offices and doing the right thing, then maybe you can. But right now, if you can't, you should join the Mises Caucus and the Republican Party. You know what I mean? And make that the new young make that the new Ron Paul movement, man. You know what I mean?
Well, I can tell you that it's something that I would consider. I would also just advise your audience to be aware that the Nick Sarwarks and the Joe Bishop Henchmans that are being displaced from the LNC are finding homes elsewhere. Right. And so wherever we go, we have to be on the defensive. We have to put up the right vanguards. I think that we probably should be extremely selective with who we allow into our ranks. So like the leadership at Young Americans for Liberty today, those trying to save face inside the organization and pretend like their organization is not under the direct influence of the LNC, they'll probably argue that I was just too puristic, that I had too high of standards for who the CEO should be or what they should believe in, right? But I'm here to say that my only standard was that the CEO of Students for Ron Paul should actually believe in the Ron Paul revolution. And if that's too much of a purity test for anybody, then they don't belong anywhere in this movement. They don't belong anywhere close to this movement. And that's exactly the kind of person that we should be keeping at arm's length.
Right. No, I agree. And you know, as somebody who I got involved with the Libertarian Party to fight Nick Sarwark. I mean, that was really what it was. It was that wing, you know, had been a member of the, I had been a registered Libertarian since 2010. And that's what I think a lot of people in the party don't understand. They're like, oh, you're a Republican. You came from the Republicans. I'm like, yeah, in 2010. Like, this is, you know what I mean? This is 12 years ago. 12 years ago, I did that. I did that before Nick Sarwark was the chair of the party. You know, and so I wanted a party that wasn't embarrassing to me anymore, and so that's why I started doing what I've done and started fighting the Nick Sarwarks of the party, and they are leaving, and they are going to go other places, and you do have to watch out for Nick Sarwark and his Wedge Squared Institute thing that he's trying to get all involved in all kinds of different campaigns around the country, and you should definitely 100% make sure that at every turn you are opposing these people. Period, because they are the infiltrators, right? They're the ones.
They're the enemies from within. With friends like Nick Sarwark and Joe Bishop Hinchman, I mean, who even needs enemies? Who even needs the state, right?
Exactly.
But and just in case we need to connect any more dots, helping the audience understand that this is in fact a Sarwarkian takeover, so to speak. Let's keep in mind, just like Joshua said at the beginning of the show, Lauren is a close friend of Joe Bishop Hinchman. It's also been documented, and this is public knowledge, that Lauren Daugherty contributed to Bill Weld's 2020 presidential campaign. This was after Bill Weld abandoned the Libertarian Party after he had used them. And this was long after Bill Weld went on TV on MSNBC and vouched for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Said that she was, in his opinion, a good person, and that his foreign policy seems to align with hers. Right. So that's who Lauren supported for president in 2020. Just a matter, you know, not that long before she came in as CEO of Young Americans for Liberty. That helps explain a lot of the sort of horrible decision making. Horrible in my opinion. That helps explain a lot of the vision that they have. Whenever we grapple with that, that helps us understand why this is such a, you know, why this is such a hideous admixture of like wokeism and neoconservatism. A lot of people might even be tempted to say something to the effect of, well, you know, I'm hearing narratives that, yeah, I was going neoconservative, and I'm hearing rumors that it's going woke. So which one is it? But look at what the LNC was doing in 2015, 2016, under the entirety of the leadership of Nick Sarwark, leading up until the present point, the kind of stuff that Joshua's been fighting. And it helps us make sense of a lot of the these terrible things that we're seeing happen to Yale. And I'll also say that, you know, it's no coincidence that I was the first chess piece to get knocked down, right? In this fight happening inside of Yale.
You're the communications guy, man.
I was the communications guy. If you want to rip out the soul of Young Americans for Liberty, and you want to turn it into something different, you have to start with communications. You have to start with the brand. Ask yourself, if there were a hostile takeover of Young Americans for Liberty being orchestrated by members of the LNC, by the LNC establishment, how would it look, and how different would it look from what is already taking place right now?
Probably not much different, if at all.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I would just want to bring up that this isn't a problem that, in my opinion, Young Americans for Liberty can fire its way out of. This is an endemic problem in which the organization has been corrupted from root to stem, in my opinion. So it's come out on Twitter, thanks to the great T.J. Roberts, that a member of the Yale Board of Directors, an individual who many people believe handpicked Lauren Daugherty for the position directly, that this member of the Board of Directors of Yale donated to a congressional candidate named Julie Oliver. Julie Oliver was a Bernie endorsed candidate for Congress in 2019, running openly on a campaign of Medicare for All. That is the kind of influence that you have on the board of directors. Like imagine me having to go to a court full of people who are a combination of ideologies from across the political spectrum, and having to argue that that this CEO doesn't fit the values of this organization, right? Well, of course, I'm just going to look like some sort of irascible, puristic, angry, resentful executive, right?
Right.
So, yeah, that's the kind of influence that you have on the board of directors, an institution inside of Yale that is virtually unaccountable. It's incredibly difficult to hold an entire board of directors accountable for bad decisions that were made. It just is. So between a board of directors that is just, in my opinion, completely and totally misaligned with the values of the Ron Paul revolution, and just in a myriad of ways, between a CEO who clearly, in my opinion, doesn't get it, as I think that we've demonstrated on this show, and something else that I want to bring up here in just a minute, there is there really looks to be absolutely no hope inside that organization of correcting course and getting back on the right track. So it's been widely observed that that in the last few months in particular, Lauren Doherty has been finding ways to bring more of her sort of LP cronies into the fabric of the organization, creating jobs for them if necessary, and bringing in her friends from within the Libertarian Party,
of course,
to come in to start off with at least fairly high ranking positions. So you actually have the board of directors, which has been corrupted, the executive team, which has been corrupted with the hiring of Mr. Steinhauser and others. And now you have staffers, junior staffers within the organization that Lauren has put there, seemingly for the purpose of diluting the values of the organization altogether. So I just want to reiterate my point from several minutes ago. I don't believe that students for Ron Paul is salvageable as a person who took arrows day after day after day until my last arrow could be taken last Monday, February the 7th. As a person who fought this inside the organization harder than anyone else in the history of the company, I believe that we have the responsibility of carrying the Ron Paul revolution to new horizons, building new institutions where it can be protected, taking that torch and setting new brush fires of liberty for it. Yes, that's responsibility, but it's also a very exciting opportunity that we should feel glad, that we get to do, that we should feel fortunate that we get to be alive to do, to take this, this amazing revolution, this philosophy forged out of centuries of opposition to tyranny. We should really appreciate the opportunity to take that to new levels.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, brother, that's a lot of information for everyone to process, I think. And it's just crazy to me because y'all seemed like such a staunch, like, stalwart. I mean, it wasn't going anywhere. That was just going to continue to grow and become this great outlet and organization. And it's really sad to hear, man. Very, very sad. And I hope that, I don't know if it can be saved. Like you said, it sounds like it probably can't. So I hope that somebody finds a good place for everyone to land, because that's a lot of people, man. That's a lot of people that put in a lot of work all over this country, and it's rough, dude. But brother, I appreciate you coming on, man. We're definitely in an hour now. Where can people find you, support you, listen to you, watch you, all that great stuff?
Sure. The best place to find me is on Twitter at J Reed Cooley, JReedCooley, or on Instagram at Reed Cooley.
Cool. Well, thanks again for coming on, man. And I hope that whoever picks you up knows what they got. You put in a lot of work for this movement, and we all owe a great debt of gratitude to you, sir. So thank you.
Thank you, Joshua.
Yeah, absolutely. Give me one second. I'll get the show closed out, brother. All right, guys, another awesome episode of Break the Cycle. Go support Reed Cooley. The guy's awesome. If you have an organization that needs some communications, definitely hit that guy up. Mises Caucus, great guy. Definitely did not deserve to be fired from Young Americans for Liberty. If you're still working with Young Americans for Liberty, I hope you fight. to keep the organization the way it was supposed to be, the way it was meant to be, founded as the Students for Ron Paul. That carries a lot of weight with me as a guy who, you know, came to this movement through Ron Paul in 2008 and came full circle and got an endorsement from Ron Paul last year very publicly. You know that anything Ron Paul is near and dear to my heart. So go support that man and fight for that organization. And if you can't, then find a good place to land that your expertise will be will get the gratitude that it deserves. Guys, go check out toplofts.com, the man, the myth, the legend, my good friend and partner on Break the Cycle, where you can get this great Break the Cycle pillow that you see on my couch every night, so that you too can cuddle with a piece of the Break the Cycle set when you watch my shows at least once or twice a week recently. But we will get back to four or five nights a week, I promise you, especially when the campaign's over. But go check out toplofts.com, use BTC at checkout for a 10% discount. Or guys, please think about going